can take your questions. Actually, I would like to start, if I can, to follow up on what Mr. Hoffman said. He focused on a few areas he'd like to see some additional research doing, and I wanted to ask Dr. Horgan if you could elaborate a little bit on the same issue. What areas would you like to see some work being done where you think we're currently ignoring or there hasn't been enough research?
Go first. I'm happy to. Okay, sure. There are, I mean, I could sit here for the day listing off areas in which I think we need a lot of work done. We know very little about the process through which terrorist individuals and terrorist organizations and networks come to an end. There is a problem, a major stumbling block in academic research on terrorism, this assumption that when terrorist groups end, that they are no longer relevant. And I think there is a serious analytical mistake being made there. It's one of the ironies that I think terrorist movements are perhaps more relevant for the academic, particularly the academic field researcher, when terrorist movements end, because that's when they are more likely to talk to us. We haven't had a discussion about fieldwork and terrorism. It's a very contentious area. It's something that raises a lot of sensitivities and concerns. But fieldwork can be done. It can be done safely, and there are ways in which, with enough preparation, enough planning, it is possible to interview people who have engaged in violent activity. We don't do enough of that. We don't talk about it. And I think there are enormous strides we can make if we enter into these sorts of discussions. It's only by sitting and speaking with people who have participated in collective violence do we get a sense of, to use your phrase, the meaning of events, the meaning of participation, the meaning of involvement, the meaning of ideology. Right now we are sitting on armchairs, quite literally, drawing inferences from things like documentation. I'm not saying, for example, that fieldwork is the best methodology or the methodology that should assume some form of prioritization over others, but it must complement the ways in which we are finding out and developing knowledge of terrorist movements through other means. I mean, I could go on. Disengagement, de-radicalization. There's enormous confusion around the issue of de-radicalization. Personally, I haven't seen any convincing evidence for de-radicalization. There is a thorough confusion between the issue of disengagement from terrorism and de-radicalization. Certainly in some of the research we've done at University of St. Andrews and at Penn State, the individuals that we have had access to and have interviewed over the last few years, while it's fair to say that they have disengaged from terrorism and more broadly subversive activity, to say that they are de-radicalized is nonsense. They still adhere to the same kinds of beliefs, the same kinds of attitudes that, in their words, made them vulnerable to radicalization in the first place. At the core of that issue, I think, is an area we know very, very little about, and that is risk assessment. Risk assessment in the context of terrorism is an enormously important area, yet we have only just begun to ask the kinds of questions we need to ask. Risk of what? Risk of being a radical? Risk of holding radical ideas? Risk of holding ideas that we deem as inappropriate? Or risk of engaging in terrorist activity? Very often these issues are poles apart, yet we speak about them as if they are synonymous. If we are to, I think, successfully move beyond this very naive language of preventing terrorism or stopping terrorism and move into the language of, if you like, limiting and controlling the extent to which terrorists can determine the way in which we respond, then I think we're onto some very, very important issues here.
Yeah, let's just pick up on one point. This issue of ending of terrorist organizations is very important. There was an article done a couple years ago by Audrey Cronin in International Security that kind of addressed this, and Audrey spent some time, and there's about to be an Adelphi paper out of IISS that I think will be a major step forward in the literature. And then when Dr. Horgan looks at that, maybe we can go on further. But the issue is that these organizations don't age very well. It's hard to go from from generation to generation and pass things over. But it is a very interesting issue, I think, particularly in the combination with religion, to find out if perhaps religious organizations are the ones that can pass on faith from generation to generation a lot easier than ideology or political factors or grievances. One of the issues I didn't mention that interests me the most in my study of violent groups is how terrorist organizations learn, what they pick up, how they emulate, and how innovation and new techniques is diffused from one group to another. This is a phenomenon we're seeing in the Middle East where things are moving, say, from Iraq, and new events, new tactics, new techniques pick up in Afghanistan. Is that by word of mouth? Is that by the Internet? Is that just emulation and adaptation passed on through the TV? Are there formal processes or informal processes that do that? What kind of organizations adapt and how well they adapt? I'm spending quite a bit of time studying Hezbollah these days. I get transcripts of Hamas websites. Hamas websites are talking quite a bit about what Hezbollah is doing, and that the chatter is about emulating their tactics, their techniques, and then starting to emulate their organizational structures and also emulating their weapons acquisitions and their tactics. How that process goes on, what can be done to either slow that down or just to understand it better is something that I'm very, very interested with. Mr. Marshall in OSCE has, I think, funded a little bit of research in that area. I know folks at King's College in London are exploring that area now. I think that's a very, very interesting area. Because if we see the convergence between state capabilities and non-state actors that have state kind of capabilities, as we see convergence in new technologies between bio, nano, and information technology, and we see this balancing effect going on, I think understanding how terrorist organizations and violent non-state actors learn and how they pick up tactics and how they pick up new techniques and the rate at which these things can be spreading should be something we should give some serious concern to.